September 11th, 2009, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2009. For this critical final quarter, the Norris Group has assembled a gold panel of accomplished industry specialists to discuss the impact of seismic economic shifts, head-scratching regulations, challenging legislation, and the accelerated pace of opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds for this unique event support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshop and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Director Iris Veneration, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2009.com, J.K. Short Sales and Kathy Van Sleen, Entrust California and Hugh Bromaw, the Nixon Library, MVT Productions, who always provide the audio-visual needs, the Business Press, airing the event live over the Internet, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2009.com for more details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Christopher Thornburg. He is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. In 2006, he co-founded Beacon Economics, an economic research and consulting firm that specializes in real estate markets, local economic development, and public and private policy issues. Dr. Thornburg, welcome to our show.
Good to be here, as always.
You have a very special event that's tomorrow. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. Well, actually, Beacon Economics will be doing our first Los Angeles Forecast Conference here in the Los Angeles area, down at the Airport Marriott. It'll be our first annual event. We're partnering with the L.A. Area Chamber of Commerce and Pepperdine to bring this to the area. You know, we already have a series of conferences around our state, but this is number six in that line, and we're so excited to get here. I mean, Southern California really is the economic center of gravity in the state, and, of course, the center of that economic center of gravity is Los Angeles, so it's an important place, and we're just great to be getting back.
And that's at the L.A. Airport Marriott, breakfast at 7:30 along with registration, and then the program between 8 and 11.
You got it. And besides the forecast and the book, we're going to have a great panel of CEOs representing healthcare and the financial industry, talking about the changes happening in terms of regulation there. So it's going to be, like I said, just a great day all the way around.
Absolutely. Well, you're going to do a lot of people a lot of good, I'm sure. I hadn't intended to ask this question, but it makes sense in light of what you're going to be discussing tomorrow. If a company were looking to relocate, would they find California a leading candidate at this point?
Well, I tell you what, we're a lot better option than we were 2 years ago. If you're going to come to the state, there's a couple things you need to worry about. One of the things, of course, is where your employees are going to live. A couple of years ago, home prices in California were just ridiculously overpriced. Now homes here in the state are much more reasonably priced, and that's got to be an important consideration for any business.
And also, I would imagine they would be able to lease or purchase commercial space at quite a different price per month.
Absolutely. Those rents are coming down. I tell you, that's a bit of a lag there, of course, because of the whole leasing situation. You know, it's funny. I can speak to personal experience on this. We have been looking for new office space, and there are a lot of landlords out there who are still in denial about the state of the economy, and you're not seeing the deals. But this is very typical at this point in the cycle. It's interesting. Residential and commercial are two sides of the same coin, and yet they come at such different parts of the business cycle. Residential leads business cycles and commercial lags it, and this downturn is no different.
So the commercial world is about to feel the same intensity of hit as the residential, but it's just taking a little bit more time to mature.
Yeah, absolutely, and of course part of that has to do with the fact that the banks are not being very aggressive in terms of pursuing bad debt or even debt that's on the fence. You know, you have a circumstance in which the banks, due to the changes in the FDIC rules, have every incentive to be, shall we say, exceedingly
lenient
is the word, yes, towards their towards people they have lent money to, because, you know, if you foreclose a loan, you have to start marking what it's actually worth on your books. But if you do not foreclose on a loan, instead you just roll a loan over and continue along merrily with a smile on your face, whistling, the FDIC will allow you to keep that on the books at sort of face value. Now, of course, as a result of that, the banks have gone towards what the people in the industry are calling extend and pretend, and that is definitely the rule of the day out there.
Now, what happens when somebody just stops making their payment? I get the feeling that they're even pretending that it's still okay in the residential world. There's a lot of properties that have not begun foreclosure, and we know people haven't paid payments for 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of that certainly is some banks' unwillingness. Sometimes it's the banks simply can't catch up. And, of course, and on top of everything else, we've had the various rounds of government moratoriums being put into place, exactly, which yet again is slowing the whole situation down. It just seems so pointless, doesn't it? I'm always one to say that, you know, if you have a problem, you're best off just kind of working through it and getting in and moving forward again. Instead, we seem to be exceedingly fond of dragging this out.
Well, you raise a great point. The unintended consequences of a moratorium is you probably have a lot longer problem.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll last longer. Now, some will tell you that it's better to let this play out over time because in so many ways you just don't want additional stress in an already weakened economy. You don't want that to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. I'm inclined to say that when it comes to foreclosures, it's probably not nearly as large of a macroeconomic issue as people think. There's very little evidence that foreclosures by themselves hurt an economy, beyond, of course, the fact that it sort of forces the bank's hand. But when you think about an actual process of losing a home and having to go to either another home or rent an apartment someplace, economically speaking, there's no necessary tremendous negative effects to that process.
Okay. Well, that raises a natural question. I read on your website, it's not what Wall Street troubles mean to California, it's what California troubles mean to Wall Street.
Yeah,
so what
exactly.
What did you mean by that?
Well, when we had the big financial meltdown last year, at the end of last year, mm-hmm. A lot of reporters called me up and they said, well, what does this mean for California? What does this mean for California? And, which I had to laugh, because Wall Street has consistently presented itself as sort of the seer of all things. You know, you'll constantly hear the mantra that the stock market leads the economy by 6 months, pay attention to the stock market, so goes the stock market, so goes the economy, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, most of that rhetoric is just total nonsense.
It seems to be able to change its direction in an afternoon when it gets afraid.
Exactly. and when you think about the economy, I mean, California has been in a recession since, oh, God, third, fourth quarter 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the reality of the fact that the Wall Street made tons of very bad bets here on the ground didn't sink into the sort of collective brains there for close to a year. So, in a sense, if you did have a true meltdown in the financial system, a true meltdown in the banking system, that would be bad news. You'd have massive deflation. You'd have contraction in the credit supply to the point that nothing compared to what we've seen, actually. That's what happened back in the Great Depression. That's why it was so bad back then. But, you know, we had a depression expert in the Federal Reserve. He wasn't going to let that happen. And, you know, frankly, you pour enough dollars on pretty much any problem, you're going to fix it at least temporarily. So it wasn't at all what Wall Street meant for California. It's what California meant for Wall Street.
Okay. You know, it seems the word trillion has replaced billion as the cost of solving problems.
Yeah.
So do you see inflation as a likely outcome of the spending we're currently doing?
No.
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 Okay.
Absolutely not. Because, look, first of all, a large portion of the money that they're spending right now is not printed money. It's money that's being borrowed through the sale of treasury bonds.
Okay.
All right, that doesn't have an inflationary effect, period. What does have an inflationary effect? Well, that's the expansion of the money supply. Milton Friedman, a long time ago, said that inflation is, in the long run, always a monetary phenomenon. You cannot have long-run big bouts of inflation without an increase in the money supply. Now, what's happened there is that the Fed, through its program of quantitative easing, has expanded the monetary base by about 100% over the course of the last year, which is a tremendous expansion of that monetary base if it were to get out into the real world. It hasn't. In fact, most of that additional cash they've printed up has simply been landed right in banks' excess reserves, and as such has been more or less scrubbed from the system, at least in the short run.
Okay.
Now, if that excess liquidity sits out there and the banks start lending it and the Fed doesn't do anything, yeah, we have a big inflationary problem on our hands. But my presumption is when the banks do start lending it out, that's when the Federal Reserve will try and start to mop up that excess liquidity and thus not have inflationary bent. I'm not saying that inflation is not a risk because it's a dangerous game they're playing. What I am trying to say is that it's not a guarantee.
Okay. Let's assume unemployment gets between 12 and 13% in California at its worst.
Which seems pretty obvious, yeah, at this point in time.
What fallout occurs when unemployment gets that high? What are the natural dominoes that, oh boy, this is going to happen now too?
You know, not much, to be perfectly honest with you. By definition, unemployment is a lagging indicator. When unemployment stops rising, the recession's over.
Okay.
So I don't pay too much attention to unemployment because it just simply doesn't have a major causal impact on the rest of the economy. Now, be it as it may, I think what it does do, of course, is it puts more stress on an already stressed financial system. You besides the fact that people are over their heads in debt and have mortgages on homes that they're extremely underwater on, now you've added in the specter of losing your job to that sort of mix of the banks of woes the banks are going to face over the next couple of years. But I don't think there's any beyond that. I don't think there's any sort of direct impact on the economy.
Okay, so there's not necessarily lower wages that occur because of that.
Well, I mean, obviously, when people lose their jobs, they lose their check.
Yeah, but I'm talking about industries going, okay, well, guys, we're slow, so we used to make this, and now as a unit, let's say renegotiation for a union, electrical union says, you know, we're not building any homes, so you're gonna have to give up some of your goodies, like the car industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that will certainly have some impact over the course of the next year or two. I think that's pretty traditional.
Okay.
But, you know, we were already having pay cuts in our economy. In fact, it's interesting. A lot of places have basically trimmed people's hours and overtime hours, which is an effective pay cut, of course, for state government and now the UC and Cal State system. They're going on enforced furloughs, which is a form of pay cut. So those pay cuts are really occurring along with unemployment rather than as in relation to them.
If California is one of the leading states in unemployment, does it affect migration patterns?
In the short run, absolutely.
Short run, okay.
You know, the number one reason people move is for job opportunity.
Okay.
The number two reason, and it's pretty distant number two, is relative home prices. So what does this mean in the short run? Well, people won't be moving here. You'll see people start to move out of the state. At the same time, however, those rapidly falling home prices are keeping some people here who would have left otherwise. And, of course, in a couple of years, when unemployment does start to fall and there are yet again great job opportunities here in California, you're going to see a lot of folks start to come back in a big way. So maybe less migration in the short run, but I think at the back end of this, you're going to see a lot of people starting to move back to California, take advantage of low home prices.
I think that's absolutely true. Now, what's interesting is the builders couldn't possibly be interested in creating building lots right now. So when that occurs, to me, I'm thinking there might be a real housing shortage when you get into 2012, 2013, and the builders are not ready to respond with new structures. Is that possible?
Absolutely. In fact, I don't see us having so much an issue in terms of housing from a single family perspective. I mean, there's lots of prepared lots out there in, you know, various states of readiness. And as soon as someone sees a demand for a house, they will start to build because they have that lot prepped and ready, and they obviously they want to get it off their books. They want to create a paying asset out of what's otherwise just sort of dead money sitting there. Now, the problem, I think, is going to be on the rental side. We have, in this state, not built enough rental housing for literally decades. And when people do start to move back, you're going to have the same problems reemerging, which is to say not enough housing, particularly in low-income families, with a resultant problem in overcrowding. So I had hoped all along that the state would make some effort towards planning right now for that inevitable eventuality, but I have yet to see any substantial policy changes that might encourage more multifamily production in the future.
You know, I think, another solution might be to give investors financing to where we can hold these properties that we're buying for a very reasonable price, because then the market would dictate what the rent would be, and I think you'd solve the problem with a single-family house. I really do.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. When you think about financing, I mean, we got into this mess in large part because of too much financing. Now, of course, we're in the second phase of that, which is that there's not as much financing around as people would like. But it's always difficult to say, well, are people simply is there a true market failure out there right now, or is it just that people are suffering from withdrawal, if you will, from a steady stream of crazy credit?
Well, you know, what's interesting is the investor, and I'm talking about the investor that actually buys and holds the property and ultimately pays it off.
Mm-hmm.
There never was too much financing for them. There was the too much financing, and all the aggressive programs were definitely to speculators and owner-occupants that, stated income, light on their loan app. So I just think that, you know, if your goal would be to find reasonable rentals, they're sitting there all over the place in Riverside and San Bernardino anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the financing isn't there to finance and get to hold them as rentals. So anyway, that's probably a federal program that needs to be established.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I have friends who are in that industry of buying up homes and renting them out. And you're right. I mean, they're having a tough time even getting 50% financing for these things.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, It's what would seem like a sure deal doesn't seem like a sure deal to the banking sector, and that I agree that is problematic. But, you know, then again, a lot of these guys are hanging on to real estate portfolios, which are slowly imploding. And to them, you know, it may seem a much scarier thing than what it seems like on the investor side of the fence.
I think the number of bank-owned properties is going to dramatically increase in the next year. So do you see more price damage coming for California because of that?
Not really. They're going to come onto the market. I think they will play a role more of holding prices down than so much causing them to fall further. We know there's pent-up demand for housing. If you go and look at the auctions, you see what's happening right now. I mean, there are people out there who want to buy foreclosed units. I think they're primarily annoyed that not enough are coming on the market.
In the short run, that's true. I wonder, you know, it's interesting, and again, that we always get into conversations that are very interesting to me. How can you have pent-up demand when you had the most generous financing programs in existence that kind of borrowed into the future borrowers that wouldn't have matured until 2009 and 2010 and shoved them into 2005 and 2006? I'm part of a market that gets multiple offers on everything, but it is surprising to me that there is this demand when you have so many people that were artificially allowed to participate before they were ready. So I don't know how to explain that myself, but there you're right. There is demand, and people want to buy the property. Now, what about the fact that rent is probably, at least in Riverside, San Bernardino, rent is more expensive than the PITI payment? That's never occurred in California that I can remember.
Yeah, well, again, that part of that is going to be due to the fact that you have a lot of people who just can't qualify for mortgages because they already have a bad mortgage on their payment.
Well, you know, see, that's another thing. We sit there and go, okay, you got unemployment pretty much at a record, foreclosures at a record, mm-hmm. and generous loan programs. So who is actually going to borrow the money and qualify. It just seems to be kind of a conundrum for me, I think.
Right. I think there's a lot more potential buyers who smartly sat in the sidelines and waited this thing through who are coming out.
Okay.
I think that's part of it. I think there's other people who may have bought and been foreclosed on, and they're getting maybe co-signed by their parents or something to help them go out and buy something that can actually afford this time. So we're going to be people who have the financial ability to overcome the foreclosure. You know, particularly now, if you talk to the bankers, not on the record, they will tell you that they'll help people come through the doors who have a recent foreclosure on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they'll look the other way because they know that this person just made a bad mistake, and there's no point of not of turning down a potential good loan.
I think that's absolutely a correct decision, actually.
Yeah, and so you are seeing that happen. But in most cases, they are willing to do that in as much as they can get some sort of Fannie Freddie backing for it. That goes back to this idea about why can't investors get financing? Well, again, most of the mortgage market right now is being dominated by Fannie and Freddie. They're kind of driving the show. And unless Fannie and Freddie's willing to come in and back this mortgage product or buy it off the bank's books, there's simply very little money out there available just because of the fact that these banks are so sort of gun-shy.
Yes. Loan modification programs that are in place right now usually do not change the principal balance. So what chance do they have of working in California?
Zero.
Okay.
I mean, that's not even it, the whole thing's so sort of silly, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, of course you can't possibly expect to have any sort of true recovery in housing by simply modifying the payment. People understand they're underwater, and they're not fooled by that. And in many cases, I just think it's a terrible public policy to even consider that. Because when you think about it, what good are we doing a family by a typical sort of maybe lower middle class family who made a bad financial decision, bought a house they couldn't afford, which they're now $200,000 underwater? So if you can modify that payment, they're still $200,000 underwater.
That's right.
How many years is it going to take for them to overcome that hurdle? And the answer is 8, 9, 10 years. Their credit score is going to heal a lot faster than their equity position. In the meantime, they're doing nothing more than tossing money down a giant hole.
Well, I think that dawns on them because most of the people that signed up for loan modifications in 2008 went into foreclosure anyway, to the tune of something around 70.5%. So 7 out of 10 already became bank REOs.
Right, exactly.
We only got about 45 seconds. What statistic do you look at and you say, okay, that is evidence of a permanent switch in momentum? Real estate is now going to get healthy.
I'm going to keep an eye on sales. That's obviously an important thing. And also, I'm going to continue to look at those mortgage delinquencies coming from the Mortgage Bankers Association because they're going to give me a good sense of what's coming on the pike. Again, that number is really grim right now. For California, about 9% of all mortgages are delinquent.
Yes.
In the state. And that tells you that we're nowhere near the end of this thing.
Absolutely. Christopher Thornburg, thank you for joining us. Have a great event tomorrow, and we'll see you September 11th at our event.
Sounds good.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2009. 1M1 Properties, Dalmay Properties, Elite Auctions, the Inland Empire Investors Forum, Las Brisas Escrow, Los Angeles Event Center, The Mortgage Equity Group, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, the REO Mentor, Tony Alvarez, Westin South Coast Plaza, Women's Council of Realtors, Inland Valley Chapter. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2009 and how you can get involved, visit isurvived2009.com.